A Wednesday Evening Lenten Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Ram, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on April 1, 1992, in the series Portrait of the Crucified, painted in his own words, entitled, It is Finished. The scripture readings are Romans 5, verses 12 through 21, and John 19, verses 28 through 37. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
We have come to the end now, the last moments of Jesus' life, and John tells us in his record that Jesus, being aware that all things were accomplished, indicating Jesus' awareness, self-consciousness, and intentionality, Jesus, being aware that it was the end, took a moment to acknowledge his own suffering, his own terrible, excruciating anguish, and cried, I thirst. And then John tells us his final word was, it is finished. And he yielded up his spirit. Have you ever compared the gospel writers? The four of them give us four different pictures of the end. We speak of the seven words of the cross, but we can come to seven only by adding the words of the four gospels. And they are all different. Matthew and Mark agree on the one word that does not appear in either Luke or John, the word of dereliction, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Luke gives us the word of forgiveness and the word, today you will be with me in paradise. John gives us the word to about Jesus' mother, the word of his human suffering, I thirst, and his final word is, it is finished. He gives us those three words. Luke gives us three as well. The final word from Luke is, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. Biblical scholars differ as to why the difference? Obviously, each gospel writer is painting his own portrait, or allowing Jesus to paint a portrait of himself in these words from the cross. What was really heard and who heard it, we don't know. But obviously, each gospel is the testimony of the evangelist to the meaning and significance, as well as the experience of Jesus in his crucifixion. We come tonight and next week to the last words. Whether it be John's, it is finished, or Luke's, as we will consider next week, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. But for John, the last word on the lips of Jesus is this word, it is finished. We hear that in our common human experience. It is finished. Maybe not just in those words, but perhaps, well, it's over. I hear it most often when I meet with a family who have just lost a loved one who has suffered terribly and struggled long. And it is a word by which we console one another. Well, it's over. It's finally over. It is finished. I remember coming to a funeral home some years ago to view the remains and greet the family of a middle-aged woman who had died and who had had a life that was tumultuous, filled with struggle. And greeting her aged mother in her 90s, it often seems, always seems to me that while we know that we must bury our parents, it must be a special suffering for a parent to have to bury a child. And so when I saw this dignified lady in her 90s, I felt for her in her loss. But her first words were, "She's peaceful now." This mother was able to yield up a daughter who had struggled throughout her life and found consolation in the fact that the struggle was over. It was finished. And that was true for Jesus. It was now over. The awful suffering, the deep pain to which we referred last week. It was now over. But that is not John's meaning. The word that he uses is translated in the New English Bible, New English translation, which I use, more clearly as "it is accomplished." It is accomplished. Meaning not simply that now the ordeal is over, but rather the purpose is fulfilled. That's John's meaning. The last word that he puts on the lips of Jesus is this confident declaration. My life task is complete. My purpose is fulfilled. My life has meaning. I am ready now to die as I lived, and it is accomplished. There is no question but what that was John's intention. Not simply to say this horrible, tragic suffering is finished, but the purpose is fulfilled. There is that ambiguity in our little three-letter word "end" in English. Where's the end? Have you ever waited for a freight train that was lumbering through town? Counted the cars? And as it approached 100, said, "Where's the end?" Or catching sight of the caboose, saying, "There's the end, the last in a series, the last in perhaps what seems to be an endless series. There's the end." But we also use that same word to say, to what end was that done? To what purpose was that done? To what end are you living? For what purpose are you living? John meant the latter. Jesus said, not simply, "It is the end, in terms of this suffering is over. But it is the end in terms of the purpose being accomplished. And what purpose? Well, once again, if we would hear from John, then we would have to say, obviously, that in dying, Jesus is saying the salvation of the world is accomplished. John's witness is in order that those who were living a generation or two or three after these events might come to see that this Jesus was the Christ, and believing, have life in His name. He is writing a document of faith, a proclamation of what God was doing in this man. And so, John, I think without doubt, in bringing Jesus' life in death to a close with that statement, is saying the salvation of the world has been won. And so it had. Earlier in the gospel, when those Greeks came to Andrew and said, we would see Jesus, and Andrew and Peter came to Jesus and said, they want to see you. It struck Jesus. And He said, now is the hour. And now is my soul in tumult. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, for this hour came I forth. Father, glorify your name. And then He said, if I be lifted up, will draw all to myself. John giving us there a foreshadowing of the lifting up on the cross, which would be the drawing of all humankind into the grace of God. So I think there's little doubt that John, in having this the word that closes the life of Jesus, is saying salvation is complete. Redemption has been accomplished. But I wonder if that word might have meant something different for Jesus than for John. For while I believe John's witness and John's testimony to be true, I do not believe that Jesus, when He said, it is accomplished, had that certain sense that now God's redemptive work was done. What might it have meant for Jesus? John wrote after Easter, but Jesus died on Good Friday. Well, for John, in the light of Easter, to say that that death was the salvation of the world. But what if one were in the midst of that death? What if one were in the midst of that darkness? And the Gospels give us, I believe, a fair picture, an honest portrayal, for Matthew and Mark record that awful cry, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Jesus not only suffered terrible physical agony, but Jesus had a sense of abandonment. He felt alone, isolated. I don't think He knew what God's next move in the drama of salvation was to be. It seems to me that the wonder and the glory of Jesus is that He was true to the end, dying in the truth that He had lived, not knowing. If He had a card up His sleeve, knowing that on Easter morning all would be glory, then for me, the wonder of it is drained away. Then we bleed this this moment of all of its reality. Literally, we take the guts out of the gospel. What did it mean for Jesus to say it is accomplished? It seems to me that for Jesus to say it was accomplished, he was saying, I will die as I have lived, and I will breathe my last, true to the end. The wonder of Jesus is that Jesus fully followed the will of God, that he followed faithfully to the end, that he did not swerve to the right or to the left, that he did not say, I have come to find out what is expedient, but he said, I have come to bear witness to the truth. And he didn't quit. And because he didn't quit, he could say with his dying breath, it is accomplished. I have lived true to the truth of which I have been convicted. I have lived true to the truth that I believe is God's truth. My life has meaning. My life has had purpose. My message tonight is summed up in this sentence. Anything worth living for should be worth dying for. That, to me, is the wonder of Jesus. And the challenge to us, so to live that at any moment we would be willing to die for it. That is to live. That is to live truly. That is to live faithfully. That is to live life compelled by the truth before the face of God. And if one has done that, then one need not test the waters. Caiaphas, when they said the whole world is going after him, we've got to do something, Caiaphas said, calm down, calm down. It is expedient that one man die for the nation, that the nation be spared. Savvy old fox, politician to the core, knowing the ins and outs of compromise and accommodation, knowing how to survive and get on in the world, Caiaphas, no wonder you're the high priest. You know how to play the game. Jesus said, I have come to bear witness to the truth. But Jesus, it will kill you. Nevertheless, and living that way to his dying breath, he could die saying, it is accomplished. Is there any higher calling, or is there any other calling for any of us than to live our truth, to be true to ourselves, not true to what society suggests or the church requires or peers expect, true to our inner self, to the truth that has gripped us? Anything worth living for must be worth dying for, and we ought to live every moment so as to be willing to die for that for which we live. person who in our own day, our own century, has exemplified that for me better than anyone else is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And I pulled his biography off the shelf, remembering this marvelous passage from a letter that he wrote to the great American theologian Reinhold Niebuhr in 1939. Bonhoeffer visited this country, Union Seminary, New York City. Hitler was on the move. It was the last ship to leave New York Harbor for the continent. Bonhoeffer, a brilliant young theologian, was begged by his American colleagues to remain to wait out the war. But he boarded the ship, and in explanation to Reinhold Niebuhr, an esteemed professor, he said, "I have made a mistake in coming to America. I must live through this difficult period of our national history with the Christian people of Germany. I will have no right to participate in the reconstruction of Christian life in Germany after the war if I do not share the trials of this time with my people. Christians in Germany will face the terrible alternative of either willing the defeat of their nation in order that Christian civilization may survive, or willing the victory of their nation and thereby destroying our civilization. I know which of these alternatives I must choose, but I cannot make that choice in security." And you know the story. He went back, eventually joined a conspiracy to assassinate Hitler, which misfired. He was arrested, incarcerated, and on April 9, 1945, just before the region was liberated in Bavaria in southern Germany, he was hung. The camp doctor remembers the last scene, Bonhoeffer on his knees fervently praying. And he said to one of his fellow prisoners, as his name was called, Prisoner Bonhoeffer, "This is the end. For me, the beginning of life." In that marvelous poem that he wrote, "Who Am I?" he says, "They tell me I'm this buoyant spirit spreading sunshine and peace. But I myself feel like a caged bird, restless, longing for the sound of birds and flowers and sunshine. Who am I? Am I this woebegone coward that I know myself, or am I this strong figure standing to support others? Who am I? The one or the other? Who am I? Thou knowest, O Lord, I am thine." And so he could go to his execution. And he could say, "It is accomplished. For it is not final. Whether we fail or succeed, whether we live or die, it is rather, well, whether we have lived to the end," and calls us to follow in his steps. Would to God that we would stay the course, that we would not falter, no matter what the price, that we would be true to our truth, to our last breath. And then death becomes the portal to light and peace, for we will have been able to say, my life has meaning. It is accomplished. God grant it for us all.